Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler, and you can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Monday, May 12th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, and kick things off with the bad news, as outfielder Dane Myers was placed on the 10-day IL with an oblique strain. The severity of that strain won't be known until the results of his MRI are available, but Myers was killing it before his injury, batting .337 with three homers and seven steals to go with a 138 WRC+. It was looking like a breakout season for Dane Myers on the Marlins, but now he'll head to the IL with an oblique strain, and outfielder Derek Hill will return from the IL to replace him. He was out with a sprained wrist and is likely to directly replace Myers in center field. Derek Hill homered in his return to the lineup on Monday. Now taking a look at some transactions, first baseman Jake Berger was recalled from the minors. He was demoted 10 days ago after starting the season batting 190 with three homers, two steals, and a 56 WRC+. But since being demoted, Berger at AAA has batted 391 with two homers and a 195 WRC+. And that was enough for the Rangers to give Berger another shot. With Evan Carter up on the roster, that sort of restricts Berger's playing time. And so he's likely to be on the short side of a platoon at first base with Josh Smith. Blaine Crim was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, so his playing time obviously destroyed. But I think Josh Smith will also see a reduction in his playing time. I know he has the ability to play all over the field, but if he's limited to first base because of all the other regulars across the field, then his playing time reduces as he won't see time against left-handed pitching moving forward as Josh Smith as a result of Jake Berger being recalled from the minors. Next, we've got shortstop Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who was activated from the 10-day IL. He had been out with a hamstring strain. Prior to his injury, he batted .280 with no homers, six steals, and an 87 WRC+. And Kiner-Falefa is expected to reclaim the everyday shortstop role for the Pirates. Leover Peguero was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. So that leaves the middle infield open for Kiner-Falefa. Next, we have outfielder Will Brennan, who was recalled from the minors. He didn't make the Guardians opening day roster, despite being a solid role player for them across the past couple of years. At AAA to start the year, Will Brennan batted .304 with three homers, two steals, and a 108 WRC+. And it looks like he's going to be on the strong side of a platoon in right field with John Kenzie Noel, which will shift Nolan Jones to center field as he'll platoon with Angel Martinez. And in a corresponding move, Brian Rocchio was optioned to the minors. He struggled to a 165 average with no homers, two steals, and a 27 WRC+. He had already started to lose playing time at shortstop, but it looks like Gabriel Arias will be the Guardians' everyday shortstop moving forward. And our last transaction involves shortstop Jordan Lawler, who was recalled from the minors on Monday. He is the number one Arizona prospect and the number four prospect in baseball, according to MLB Pipeline. So this is a super exciting call-up for Jordan Lawler. He was the sixth overall pick in 2021. And after batting .278 with 20 homers and 36 steals, and a 113 WRC plus between AA and AAA in 2023. Jordan Lawler earned himself a cup of coffee, but was injured most of 2024. So we're looking for him to come back this season and sort of get right back to where he was in 2023. And so far at AAA, Jordan Lawler has proven exactly that in 2025, batting .336 with six homers, 13 steals, and a 143 WRC plus. So he's clearly ready for the majors. I'm super excited to see what he can do, but it's unclear where he's going to play for the Diamondbacks. He spent time at second base, third base, and shortstop at AAA, but he wasn't in the lineup on his first day on the major league roster this year. So I think Lawler's likely to be a utility infielder who's going to see most of his playing time on the short side of a platoon at shortstop. And to wrap up this section, we'll take a look at our one bit of news as catcher slash first baseman Moises Ballesteros is expected to be promoted for his MLB debut, with Ian Happ likely headed to the IL, say a Suzuki will shift to the outfield, which will open up the DH role for Ballesteros. The left-handed hitter is the Cubs' number four prospect and is baseball's number 61 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline. And the 21-year-old batted 368 at AAA with four homers, three steals, and a 150 WRC plus. So he's got a very good bat for somebody of his age. To be able to bat 368 at AAA at any age is incredible, but to do so at 21 suggests that Ballesteros is a standout prospect and probably should get your attention in the majority of leagues, depending on how much he's going to play. Obviously, he's got the DH role. I want to see what the Cubs are going to do with him early on. Now we'll take a look at some of our notable performances from Monday, a day in which we had just 11 games on the slate. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with Trey Sweeney, who helped the Tigers to win versus the Red Sox, going 3-for-5 with a run, a home run, and three runs batted in. It was his fourth homer of the year, and it traveled 396 feet at 101 miles per hour. Sweeney continues to play every day for the Tigers, which has allowed him to gain relevance in 15-team leagues, thanks to his jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none play style. He's a guy who's got a little bit of power, a little bit of average, a little bit of speed, a little bit of defense, but nothing that really stands out. He doesn't have outstanding contact power or speed skills, and his defense really leads to a lot of criticism, despite zero outs above average, suggesting that he's at least average at shortstop. But with an everyday role and decent production across the board, Sweeney is somebody that is worthwhile in deeper leagues. I roster him in 15 teamers as a bench bat, but he really doesn't have the standout tools to make that leap into standard league relevancy. That's Trey Sweeney. Next, we'll discuss Zach Neto, who helped the Angels to win in San Diego, going 2-for-4 with two runs, a home run, two RBIs, and a walk for good measure. It was his fifth homer of the year, and it traveled 373 feet at 110 miles per hour. Neto is leading off every day for the Angels and building off an under-the-radar 2030 campaign from last year. His batted ball metrics didn't really support that level of production in 2024, but now they do. Plus 4% to his barrel rate, and he's now at 12% in that department. He's seen a 13% increase to his hard hit rate, all the way up to 51%, and he's displaying an improved swinging strike rate that suggests his strikeout rate will come down from the career high rate that it's at right now, which also suggests that Neto's batting average, which currently sits at 279, could stick. And that's a 30 plus point improvement from last year. I think we are seeing Zach Neto continue to turn into an absolute fantasy beast. And lastly, we've got Wyatt Langford, who helped the Rangers to win against the Rockies, going 1-for-4 with a run, a home run, and two runs batted in. It was his seventh homer of the year, and it traveled 412 feet at 107 miles per hour. And after a successful debut campaign, we were looking for Langford to carry over his second half power gains. And so far, that's what we've seen. Obviously, seven homers, but he's sporting a slightly improved barrel rate and now sports an ISO more than 60 points higher than last year. Langford's prospect pedigree alone is enough to suggest that he'll keep this up all season long. But as long as he remains on the field, which has already been difficult for him, he's already spent some time on the IL. I think as long as he remains on the field, though, his everyday role in the two hole for the Rangers makes Langford one of the highest coveted outfielders in baseball. But if you'd like breakdowns of more hitting performances from Monday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Clark Schmidt, who helped the Yankees to win in Seattle, going six innings, allowing three hits with three earned runs and two walks while striking out six. He induced 10 whiffs with 32% CSW across 92 pitches. And Clark Schmidt took advantage of pitching at T, as Nick likes to call it. The Mariners let him fill up the zone with cutters and sinkers while they chased his breaking pitches and watched them fall in the zone early in counts, allowing him to get a ton of called strikes. Overall, Schmidt stole 19 called strikes and got away with way too many pitches over the heart of the plate. Ultimately, though, I think Schmidt's four-pitch mix is solid enough to make him a Toby, but his lack of command and lack of overpowering stuff prevents him from taking that next step into Holly territory, which is what we saw glimpses of last year. It's worth noting that Schmidt has improved his velocity start over start this season, and he's now up to sitting 93.5 with the cutter in this one. It's an intriguing development if it continues, especially if it continues to be married with this level of success, which suggests that it could work for Schmidt versus the Mets next time out. Next, we'll discuss Chase Dolander, who did all he could, but the Rockies lost in Texas. He went six innings, allowing one hit and two earned runs while walking three and striking out seven, inducing eight whiffs with 24% CSW across 85 pitches. Dolander had tossed 5 2/3 shutout frames before Wyatt Langford took him deep, and that's why that was part of why he earned his mention earlier in the podcast. Dolander's fastball was great in this one, despite its usual poor shape. At 97 miles per hour, it stole 11 called strikes and induced 5 whiffs for 33% CSW, while Dolander's curveball landed low a few times to induce a trio of whiffs. His cutter went just 8% CSW, while his changeup earned just 14% strikes, so he really didn't have much support for the fastball, and I guess the curveball a little. This was really just the start of the Rangers being too patient and then getting overpowered by that heater. I can't imagine it's easy if you're sitting there waiting for the right pitch to come, and then you're like, okay, I guess I got to swing at this fastball, and it comes in at 97. The poor shape is really just something that's going to support that heater, but even at 97, that's got to be difficult to hit. Dolander's going to have a tough time making this work, though, especially pitching for the Rockies with his empty velocity being like his main calling card. So there's no way I'm going for Dolander's next start in Arizona. And lastly, we've got Jackson Jobe, who helped the Tigers to win versus the Red Sox, tossing 5 2/3 innings, allowing 3 hits and 1 a run while walking 5 and striking out 7. He induced 15 whiffs with 34% CSW across 100 pitches. And Jobe did an incredible job of avoiding the heart of the plate versus right-handed batters. That's how he avoided so much damage in this one. But he failed to employ that same command against lefties, which led to his sole run coming on a solo shot by Willier Abreu. The heater dominated upstairs at 97 miles per hour, 17 inches of vert, as the pitch induced 4 whiffs with 31% CSW, while Jobe's slider remained around the zone for 5 whiffs and 39% CSW. And really, those are the two pitches he needs, and just a little bit of support is welcome. But his changeup was inconsistent. However, his sinker was there to keep him in bats versus right-handed batters, as it stole a lot of strikes, but he struggles to have that same success against left-handed batters. With the changeup feel going in and out and the general lack of command against lefties, Jobe definitely doesn't have the complete profile right now, but his stuff is absolutely deniable. And I think if he can stay around the zone and keep that heater upstairs, he's going to be really good. Whether or not Jobe can do this again in Toronto next time out is yet to be seen, but I think you just got to keep starting him and hope he continues to figure things out. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Tuesday, Monday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Shelby Miller recorded his second save with a perfect ninth. That will probably be his last one, as Justin Martinez is due back this weekend. Maybe Miller can get one or two more. Ryan Helsley recorded his eighth save with a perfect ninth. Drew Pomeranz recorded his first save with a scoreless ninth. That's got to be his first save in years. Porter Hodge had pitched on back-to-back days, and Ryan Presley's sort of on timeout, so anybody could have gotten a save for the Cubs on Monday. Jacob Webb recorded his first save with a scoreless ninth. Luke Jackson started the ninth, but he was removed after being struck by a batted ball. I'm hoping he's okay, but that's why he didn't get the save in this one. And lastly, Carlos Estevez recorded his 12th save with a scoreless ninth. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, David Bednar allowed the winning run to score on an error, so you can't really blame him for that one, and that's why he took his fourth loss. Robert Suarez completely lost his control, walking 4 batters and surrendering 5 runs in the ninth inning to blow his first save and take his first loss. Kenley Jansen pitched a perfect ninth, up by 4 after Suarez gave up all those runs. And lastly, Raisel Iglesias allowed 2 runs in the ninth to blow his third save, but he earned his third win when the Braves walked it off. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, make sure to check out Rick Graham's weekly articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now look forward to Tuesday, May 13th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Max Fried versus Brian Wu. You've got Fried, who's looking like one of the best pitchers in baseball, and Brian Wu, who continues his ascension as he's now and got that ace is going to ace label. So we got two aces squaring off. Should be a blast. In terms of probable starters, we've got 8 guys in our auto starts tier, including Fried and Wu. We've also got Dylan Cease versus the Angels, Spencer Schwellenbach versus the Nationals, and Jesus Luzardo versus the Cardinals. In our probably starts tier, we've got 6 guys. And in our questionable starts tier, we've got 5 guys. And that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Ben Brown versus the Marlins. It's not one I prefer to go for. Brown's arsenal is certainly lacking. It's basically 2 pitch with the fastball curveball. The Marlins, though, are a very poor lineup. So Brown maybe could make this work. I wouldn't really suggest it. That's why he's in the questionable starts tier. I'd also keep an eye out for Jose Soriano in San Diego. Same situation here. I wouldn't suggest going for it, but if you're desperate, Soriano's sinker, curveball, slider combination is solid enough to make things work against the Padres if it's all working. In terms of hitter suggestions, it was very difficult to find hitters to stream in this one. So I got one solo hitter and one team suggestion as usual. We're looking at Alec Bohm versus Jesus Luzardo. Obviously, he's been a lefty killer throughout his career, and he's done so against Luzardo, batting 455 with a 1,000 OPS and 11 at-bats. That's Alec Bohm versus Jesus Luzardo. I'd also look at Rangers and Rockies hitters in Texas. I know it's not Coors, but the pitching matchup is one to target. Kyle Freeland versus Jack Leiter. Neither guy has been incredible this year, so I think we could take advantage of that. And if Corey Seager is back in the lineup and you're looking for some sort of, like, I don't know, DFS, I don't even know. I don't do betting. I don't know how that stuff works. Corey Seager, though, could have some success against Kyle Freeland because he's had a lot of success in the past, batting 609 with a 1451 OPS and a home run in 23 at-bats. It's Corey Seager versus Kyle Freeland. Now we'll close things out with our relievers to watch. Raisel Iglesias has pitched on back-to-back days, but Deisbel Hernandez has pitched a lot recently and Dylan Lee as well. So maybe we see Pierce Johnson get a save opportunity for the Braves on Tuesday. And lastly, David Bednar has pitched in 3 of the past 4 days, but so have both Dennis Santana and Caleb Ferguson. So maybe we see Ryan Borucki get a save for the Pirates on Tuesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. Tune in live on YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.